Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. And, Jim, before we start onto the good martini, just want to thank the folks who reached out to us on Twitter and in other sites yesterday to wish us well on our seven-year anniversary in the Three Martini Lunch. One of my favorite questions from someone was, where can I get an Enhanced Interrogation Techniques Goofy action figure? And unfortunately, we're running into some serious copyright issues with Disney over such a thing. But I love the idea, so I just wanted to give credit where credit is due there. So
we can find some sort of like Chinese knockoff company that can make a Moopy figure, right? And just, you know, give them the little water bucket and the towel and you know, a firearm and stuff like that. That would work out pretty well. So if you're a Chinese toy company that works cheap, let us know.
Oh, man, that would be so fantastic. All right, let's move on to our good martini. And while this is an amazing martini, obviously it comes with a somber backdrop. John Kelly, the White House chief of staff, as most of our listeners probably know, spent time in the White House briefing room yesterday. He was only in there for a little less than 20 minutes. But wow, what an explanation of the treatment and what families go through when they've lost someone in service to this nation. He would know from multiple perspectives. As he explained yesterday, he has buried his own son, and he has also, of course, been a commander as a general in Iraq and elsewhere, where his orders ultimately led to situations where his own men were killed. So Jim does an excellent job in the jolt today of laying out that narrative that Kelly offered on Thursday. And then Kelly got into the controversy that's been going for the past couple of days with Florida Democratic Congresswoman Federica Wilson accusing President Trump of being deeply insensitive and saying that one of the soldiers who was killed in Niger, Trump simply told his young pregnant widow, well, that's what he signed up for and so forth. Kelly knows much differently. And we have several clips here of his reaction to this starting here.
When he died, he was surrounded by the best men on this earth, his friends. That's what the president tried to say to four families the other day. I was stunned when I came to work yesterday morning and brokenhearted at what I saw a member of Congress doing. A member of Congress who listened in on a phone call from the President of the United States to a young wife, and in his way tried to express that opinion. He's a brave man, a fallen hero. He knew what he was getting himself into because he enlisted. There's no reason to enlist. He enlisted. And he was where he wanted to be, exactly where he wanted to be, with exactly the people he wanted to be with when his life was taken. That was the message. That was the message that was transmitted.
And Kelly says the political furor that has arisen over this controversy leaves him wondering if there's any institution or any people left in this country that everyone holds sacred.
And I thought, at least that was sacred. You know, when I was a kid growing up, a lot of things were sacred in our country. Women were sacred and looked upon with great honor. That's obviously not the case anymore, as we see from recent cases. Life, the dignity of life, was sacred. That's gone. Religion, that seems to be gone as well. Gold Star families, I think that left in the convention over the summer. But I just thought the selfless devotion that brings a man or woman to die on the battlefield, I just thought that that might be sacred.
And Kelly says he struggled greatly as so much media attention was paid to this.
And when I listened to this woman and what she was saying and what she was doing on TV, the only thing I could do to collect my thoughts was to go and walk among the finest men and women on this earth. And you can always find them because they're in Arlington National Cemetery. Went over there for an hour and a half, walked among the stones, some of whom I put there, because they were doing what I told them to do when they were killed.
And finally, he says, let's please try to keep this last thing sacred.
I still hope, as you write your stories, and I appeal to America, that let's not let this maybe last thing that's held sacred in our society. A young man, young woman going out and giving his or her life for our country. Let's try to somehow keep that sacred. But it eroded a great deal yesterday by the selfish behavior of a member of Congress.
Jim, one of the other things that General Kelly said and encouraged people to do was to watch the movie Taking Chance, which is the story of a Marine taking a fallen Marine, one who died under Kelly's command, back to his family and the funeral in Wyoming. I had seen it before. I watched it again last night, and it's worth everyone's time. Just horrific that politics invades everything. Trump's comments about what presidents did and what presidents didn't do probably weren't the smartest thing to do in public. Frederica Wilson clearly politicized this to a degree which is just revolting, and we'll talk about her a little bit more in the next martini. But what do you make of General Kelly, given not only his background, but his command of the podium yesterday?
We have a lot of fun on this podcast, and I'll often begin an assessment or reaction to events of the day with, you know, Greg, if I had a cynical mind, I would think blah, 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 blah. And I fill in, you know, a very cynical interpretation of events in the news. And there are times that our cynicism is well-founded. And then perhaps there's too much cynicism, and perhaps, you know, the snarky tone of political correspondents like myself, maybe it can be acidic and damaging to our body of this public discourse at times. I think you listen to John Kelly. First of all, you can hear the absolute silence in that White House press briefing room. And it's an observation that there are some things we don't need to be cynical about. Look, I'm not always going to agree with John Kelly and his decisions. I'm not always going to agree with the decisions coming out of the Trump White House. But I don't see how you can listen to that and not believe that John Kelly has his heart in the right place, that John Kelly wants the country to have an appropriate respect, reverence, the appreciation that our men and women in uniform deserve, that their families deserve. You certainly have heard the argument that sometimes the families feel like they have it harder, that basically that the troops know that they're safe. The troops know that they have a certain amount of control over their actions. The family is behind and has to live with not knowing of what's happening on a moment-to-moment basis to their loved ones. I've been kind of really struck by how this controversy has played out during the week, because listeners to this podcast know I do not hesitate to criticize President Trump. The man has a lot of deep-rooted flaws, but I don't think he would be intentionally cruel or insensitive or say the wrong thing to a grieving widow. The fact that he made the call, I think, says something about Trump. The fact that the fact that it came out very wrong, and the fact that his mouth got him in trouble, this is not really surprising to anyone who's watched Donald Trump for a long time. But again, I don't think he's saying anything to the widow to say, well, he knew what he was getting in for. No, I think what he's saying is that we revere these men for their courage and for their willingness to bear that risk. And again, for all of his flaws, I just don't think Trump would call up a widow and try to hurt feelings or try to make a moment worse than that. And I think it was worth noting, John Kelly said there are no right words. There is no way to make that moment significantly less painful for that family. Do I doubt Trump, said things that came out the wrong way? No, I find it extremely believable. But I also feel that of all the things Trump does, you probably should cut him some slack on this one. This instead, it just seemed to escalate and get worse. Now, is it good for Trump to come out and say, oh, I'm doing this and other presidents didn't? No, Trump has a remarkable gift for taking a bad situation and sometimes making it worse for himself. But I just kind of wish we'd all had a more generally sympathetic approach to this entire sequence of events, for sympathy for the family and a sympathy that there really isn't anything we can say that will make that moment okay in the minds of that family. It's just, it is the nature of that moment. It's going to be painful anyway, no matter what you say. So I think John Kelly did the country a great service yesterday by kind of refocusing us and reminding us and kind of telling us that this is, not everything is supposed to turn into a political football. Not everything is an opportunity to showcase how much you disagree with somebody on the other side of the aisle. And I think that I'd like to think everybody would come across with a broad perspective of respect for John Kelly and the course that he's attempting to keep this White House on. But apparently I would be wrong, Greg. And hey, guess what? I got my cynicism in there anyway.
Yeah, you sure did. But there's reason for it here in the second martini, the bad martini. Frederica Wilson, may be close to this family. It sounds like she probably has been over the years. But given her comments over the past 48 hours, and certainly the one we're about to play, she is enjoying every single minute in the limelight. And when it's for a reason like this, it kind of makes your stomach turn. So John Kelly has this presentation in the briefing room yesterday, goes about 18 minutes. A local TV station, I believe in Florida, catches up with the congresswoman at the airport. And here is her reaction to John Kelly probably calling her an empty barrel full of noise and other things. I don't know exactly how the question was framed, but here's her reaction to her being talked about from the White House briefing room.
You mean to tell me that I have become so important that the White House is following me? And my word, this is amazing. It's amazing. That is absolutely phenomenal. I have to tell my kids that I'm a rock star now.
I am a rock star now. Jim, this just reminds me kind of the comedians, the Jon Stewarts, the Jimmy Kimmels, who'd get all the press attention they can blasting someone politically. And then when there's pushback, they're like, what are you coming after little old me for? And now she's clearly basking in all this.
So she became a rock star out of it. So I guess that's a happy ending. All's well that ends well for her. Look, an observation out of this. In Kelly's remarks, he told a story about some unidentified member of Congress who was attending a funeral for, I believe it was FBI agents, who were killed in the line of duty. And at some point in the process of making remarks at the event, begins talking about how he'd secured funding for the headquarters building of the FBI down there. We've all been in a moment where someone has either said something inappropriate or missed the mark, or, you know, the equivalent of a belch in church, right? I mean, something where it doesn't go right. You don't need to take it's a bad moment and blow it up for the world. You don't need to take something that is embarrassing and cringe-inducing and doesn't go. And like I said, as I mentioned a moment earlier, I don't think Trump was trying to do this. I think this was Trump being Trump, half remembering the things he wanted to say, and it comes out as a jumble, and it doesn't make the widow feel any better at all. That's not the worst thing you can do in this world. That is a very human error on the part of Donald Trump. And she chose to not just go. She witnessed this. She heard this and then felt the need to go to the media about it. Well, all right. That's, you know, maybe it is news. Maybe it is worth telling the people. I have my doubts. You could hear in Kelly's voice a certain amount of curious disbelief that the congresswoman was present and didn't feel like this was a private moment. Now, not only is it a private moment where she feels to be, you know, present between the president of the United States and the widow, now the whole world needs to know about it. Now we hear that she seems quite pleased with the amount of attention that has come her way for that. And I kind of feel like there's a very clear contrast here, that here is John Kelly struck by events and going to Arlington with no fanfare, not, you know, calling in the press to do a photo op at fanfare. I think he just simply felt like he needed to do that for his soul. He needed to do that to clear his head and regain the appropriate perspective on what must have felt like a political tornado and just kind of keep things in perspective. And this is the opposite of what we're seeing here. When a really awful controversy comes to light, I just don't want to hear you giggling about how popular this has made you and what fame you feel like you've gotten and all that kind of stuff. It was not just a poor choice of words on her part. I kind of don't, this feeds into the cynicism that we are, you know, that a good portion of the people in our government at the highest level are just simply not good people who lack empathy and who see everything as a political opportunity.
Wow. All right. Let's move on to the crazy martini now, because that is kind of part of the message that former President George W. Bush delivered yesterday in a speech. He talked a lot about the coarsening of our politics, and here's a brief snippet of that.
We've seen our discourse degraded by casual cruelty. At times, it can seem like the forces pulling us apart are stronger than the forces binding us together. Argument turns too easily into animosity. Disagreement escalates into dehumanization. Too often we judge other groups by their worst examples while judging ourselves by our best intentions. Forgetting the image of God we should see in each other.
So, Jim, the political reaction to this, of course, is about as you'd expect. Some on the right, particularly those who love Trump, say, hey, where was this the past 8 years? It's not like there wasn't any division during that time and you kept your mouth shut. On the left side, oh, George W. Bush wasn't all that bad. We disagreed with him. But, you know, in the end, he's a pretty decent guy. You quote Jennifer Sabin in the Morning Jolt today from Huffington Post, who says, however much and often I had disagreed with Bush, thought him misguided, unfit for the job, led by warmongers, et cetera, et cetera, I never thought he was insane or anti-American or in bed with an overseas enemy or white supremacist. I look back at how determined I was that John McCain could not be president when the worst thing that could happen was to elect a war hero with conservative views and a moron for vice president. So she can't even resist the digs at that point. But as you point out, Jim, that's what happens every single election cycle with the Republican. They get demonized to the point of pure evil by the left, and it's coming back to bite them.
First of all, let me observe that, you know, I largely agree with George W. Bush's remarks. I didn't think it was like, I think it's very revealing that people interpret it as a slam on Trump. He didn't mention Trump by name, and I think he was talking about aspects of American politics that are not particular to Trump. For example, if you want to say the Charlottesville hate rally and you know, people, guys with torches chanting Jews will not replace us, if you want to say that has nothing to do with Trump, okay, then when somebody else denounces that, you can't say, how dare you attack Trump like that. If you bristle every time somebody denounces white supremacy and you interpret that as an attack on Trump, I think that says something more about you and how you see Trump and the connection to white supremacy than the person making the criticisms. But beyond that, I should be saying, oh, isn't it nice that liberals are seeing that George W. Bush was a good man? But I really feel like this is a big portion of, you know, to use the cliche or the meme, this is how you got Trump. The only person who really seemed to have that moment of clarity and recognize it right before the election was Bill Maher, who said, I think he had David Frum on his show, and he said, look, we treated Bush like he was the devil for 8 years. And then we did the same for John McCain, and then we did it for Mitt Romney, and they were all decent men who we just happened to disagree with politically. And it was great to, and he says, and then of course his point was, but Trump is different. Trump really is a fascist. Trump will take over, you know, blah, blah, blah. And there's a part of me that's like, okay, why do you think people aren't listening to you about Trump? Because you know, he and many other liberals treated Mitt Romney like he was the devil. Remember the ad that implied he had somehow given some steelworker's wife cancer or something like that. And you can go back further to McCain, who was seen as this, you know, senile, doddering warmonger who was all that stuff. You mentioned the shot she takes at Sarah Palin. I mean, would it kill you to say that Sarah Palin, you know, maybe you thought she was prepared to be a heartbeat away from the presidency. Maybe you don't. But either way, this is still a woman who, you know, kind of was plucked out of the most normal life possible, lived the most middle class life of anybody in American politics, suddenly thrust into the center of the whirlwind. And I think still did a lot of good, if nothing else, for all the members of families who have children with Down syndrome, families that have had to deal with great challenges like that. And I remember, you know, it's ironically a scene in Game Change, which was, you know, largely going to demonize her. That pointed out that all these families kind of came forward and said, you showed, you know, we don't have to be ashamed, that we can be proud of our children, that the fact that our children are different doesn't mean they have to be hidden away from the world or that there's something, you know, wrong with us for having those children. And like, that's a powerful thing. Not every political figure does that. And I just, you know, would wish, you know, Sarah Palin could get a little bit of credit for that sort of thing instead of, you know, the endless Tina Fey impressions and things like that. Paul Ryan getting, you know, pushing granny off a cliff, right? I mean, if every single Republican is treated as the worst person possible, then unsurprisingly, people kind of tune it out. It turns into the story of the boy who cried wolf. And for liberals to fix this is not to say, oh, remember how good McCain and Romney and Bush were? Oh, by golly, if only modern Republicans could be more reasonable like them. They really were good people and good souls who we just happened to have policy disagreements with. It's like, okay, that's great, but, you know, conservatives have noticed that it's only retired or dead conservatives seem to ever get much praise from the left, right? All of a sudden, you know, like, Buckley's never been quite so praised as since he passed away. When he was alive, everybody couldn't stand, you know, everybody, lots of people on the left couldn't stand him. You fix this not by wishing the modern group of people on the right were more like some happier past days, but by looking at people on the right and saying, you know what, that's a good person. Right. We have a lot of Republican members of the House of Representatives who served in the military. Give them credit for that. A lot of Republican members are doctors, right? They're probably darn good doctors, right? Whether or not you agree with Rand Paul's libertarianism and his particular philosophy on life, the guy spends his congressional research is going off and doing ophthalmological surgery on poor orphans in Central America, right? I mean, Rand Paul is not a, you know, you can disagree strongly with him and not believe that he is a bad person. What I talked about in the Jolt is this idea that if we want a better politics, then we have to just assume, you know, reassert the default setting that the person you're arguing with is not a monster, that the person you're arguing with probably has some redeeming qualities. We need to get the contempt out of our politics and say, you know what, I think you're really wrong on X, Y, and Z. And stick to X, Y, and Z and not say, oh, and I think that you're greedy and selfish and want to hurt people and sadistic and all that kind of stuff. Just basically assess debate the issues and not the person, but also stop accusing your opponents of having these secret malevolent motives. So anyway, that's where we are. I don't know if it'll get any better. And just there's a strange irony of that. You know, people we use the phrase, strange new respect. I'm glad that, liberals feel better about George W. Bush. Any of them want to apologize for Bush Hitler stuff? Anybody want to apologize for all the Bush new statements that came out during the Bush years? Anybody, Chimpy McBush, McHitler, Halliburton, any of that stuff? Anybody want to retract any of that? No, because if not, what you're saying today doesn't really mean very much.
Yeah, based on the leftist response yesterday to John Kelly, I don't think it's going to end anytime soon. I expected them to kind of nod out of respect towards John Kelly and then start bashing Trump. But no, a lot of them are actually bashing John Kelly. So if that's happening, our goals are a long way from being achieved here.
They will respect him when he retires.
Oh, Jim, you are off the next couple of episodes, so enjoy yourself, and we will be back together on Wednesday.
I'm looking forward to that, Greg. Take care.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. There will be 3 Martini Lunch, though, on Monday and Tuesday. David French will be here in Jim's place. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Have a great weekend, everyone, and tune in Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.